Rabble rousing for today, November 12th. We're going to begin with a few articles. I'm going to give a commentary, and then I'm going to open the phone lines for more people to call in if you have comments concerning the recent election. We'll begin with an article called Why Karl Rove Pulled the Plug. It's from Velvet Revolution, and the author evidently was Mark Crispin Miller. It was in opednews.com. Finally, an elected president. Barack Obama was overwhelmingly elected by citizens of all regions of the country. Unlike the past two elections, where the results were contested in two states run by partisans who rigged the results, this election was won hands down by the person who ran the best campaign. This is not to say there were not massive problems with voting systems in many states, but this election did not come down to one state or county controlled by corrupt officials. 4 years ago, Velvet Revolution was formed out of the chaos of the 2004 election. Since then, we and all of you have fought a long battle to ensure that our elections are fair, honest, and transparent. We demanded accurate voting machines and paper ballots. In this election, both Florida and Ohio, now with paper ballots, went blue, and there's no one questioning that result. Over the past several months, we have raised the specter of a man-in-the-middle computer attack on the vote tabulators, controlled by partisan evangelicals. We identified Michael Connell as the key GOP IT expert who created these nefarious networks. We took legal action against Connell in the form of a federal deposition. Karl Rove responded by threatening Connell to either take the fall or keep his mouth shut. Connell's Bush-Cheney attorneys did everything possible to keep Connell from testifying. 2 weeks ago, Rove was confidently saying that John McCain could win 10 battleground states to become president. McCain was confidently telling everyone that he would win with a surge in the wee hours of election night. Well, last Friday, something important happened. Michael Connell was forced to appear before Solomon Oliver, a Clinton-appointed African-American federal judge in Cleveland. After attorney Cliff Arnebeck accused Connell in open court of rigging elections for Karl Rove, the judge ordered Connell to submit to a sworn deposition 18 hours before the polls were to open. On Monday at noon, Connell was placed under oath and grilled about election fraud, man-in-the-middle attacks, Trojan horse manipulations, and threats from Karl Rove. And guess what happened? Connell suddenly changed his tune. Connell said that to his knowledge there would be no tabulation manipulation of Tuesday's election. And something else. Karl Rove wrote on his blog late Monday that Obama would win by a landslide, even in those states he'd previously predicted McCain would win. In short, at Velvet Revolution, with all the help from you, our affiliates, our supporters, and others, we played a role in helping to make this presidential election more fair than the past two. Our education campaign, our paper ballot campaign, our whistleblower campaign, and our legal strategies works. That's what democracy is all about. The thing that confuses me about this article is that it didn't say what Connell actually said when he was deposed under oath. But evidently, they believe he said something of importance that affected the voting. Since as we speak, the Detroit auto industry is in Washington with their hands out for a massive bailout of their failing industry, this article seems pertinent. I'm not sure where I got it. I think it was off of opednews.com. AFS Trinity Power Corporation today announced it pulled its 150 miles per gallon plug-in hybrid SUV prototype out of the Los Angeles Auto Show, but will independently exhibit and demonstrate the super fuel-efficient vehicles on their own elsewhere in downtown L.A. during the time of the show. The company's decision followed actions by the L.A. Auto Show to muzzle AFS Trinity from highlighting the 150 mile per gallon fuel economy of its XH150 prototype vehicles. The suppression by the automakers of information about technologies such as this raises serious questions about the judgment, vision, intentions, and capabilities of the leadership of these companies. This was spoken by Edward W. Furia, chairman and CEO of the AFS Trinity. Such conduct by automakers, who are currently seeking tens of billions of taxpayer dollars, ostensibly to develop fuel-efficient vehicle technologies, is evidence that they're reluctant to embrace solutions they didn't invent. The article then went into a lengthy explanation of the shenanigans of the auto show promoters, which I'll skip, except to mention that they were not allowed to be on the main floor with the other cars, but were banished to a room in the basement. The key fact is that the LA Auto Show is owned and put on by local auto dealerships, which are, of course, tied to American Auto Corporations. Quote, we had no choice but to pull out of the show when they refused to let us state our 150-mile-per-gallon mileage estimate, as it is the most important and popular feature of our technology. Indeed, I believe our fuel economy would be the main reason that people would go to the trouble to find us at the auto show. Being in the basement was bad enough. Forcing us to be silent about our key benefit was simply unacceptable. No one questions the sales potential of the 150 miles per gallon SUV that can carry a whole family and provide better acceleration than similar gasoline models. Every single person who has driven these cars loves them and wants one. We've built two prototypes and demonstrated them across the country. Yet none of the major automakers has accepted our invitation to see and drive them, let alone license the technology and mass produce them. They usually claim that they're going to come up with something of their own in the future. In other words, they reject breakthroughs they didn't invent. In the meantime, American auto plants are closing. Men and women who are amongst the best trained, most productive auto workers in the world are losing their jobs in record numbers. And America is in danger of losing the last vestiges of its heartland heavy industry base altogether. We want people to know that a super fuel-efficient automobile solution to our dependence on oil already exists, which the driving public enthusiastically supports, and that major automakers can license and mass-produce within an estimated 3 years. According to Faria, the reason the L.A. Auto Show gave for prohibiting our 150-mile-per-gallon estimate, which we've widely used in other auto shows, and which has been broadly reported by the media worldwide, is that the EPA has not certified this mileage. But this is a weak and transparent excuse, as EPA does not certify mileage for show cars or prototypes. Certification does not happen until a car is much closer to being commercially produced. Their 150-mile-per-gallon estimate is based on a typical week of driving 40 miles, 6 days per week, and 80 miles on one weekend day each week. The first 40 miles of each day are electric, with gasoline being used only for distances beyond 40 miles. For this driving profile, the XH150 uses up to 2 gallons of gas to travel 320 miles, which works out to 160 miles per gallon, which the company rounded down to 150 miles per gallon. Then there's the battery issue. Faria explained that the difference between the AFS Trinity approach to energy storage in a plug-in hybrid and that of other developers is the use of ultracapacitors and proprietary control electronics to solve the power and life cycle limitations of batteries. He further stated, we applaud attempts by car makers and others to develop a new battery that might be able to overcome the inherent reliability and durability problem related to the duty cycle demanded of a plug-in hybrid. But waiting for it, especially as it may never emerge, or may emerge at an impossibly high cost, is risky business, particularly when the auto industry needs an energy storage and power management solution for plug-ins now. We have a solution, today, that we have demonstrated, and that only requires mass production engineering in order to be put into commercial production in a wide range of cars, trucks, and SUVs. Faria noted that the Associated Press reported yesterday that Detroit automakers are once again on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., seeking a bailout and forecasting their own demise if they don't get it. This is certain to be a major issue that the new U.S. Congress and President-elect Obama will consider. An emergency bailout could even become an issue in the remaining days of 2008 for the current U.S. Congress, he said. Well, that's certainly true, as they're lobbying right now. The action that the L.A. Auto Show took to muzzle AFS Trinity has implications for such a bailout. The idea that the Detroit automakers, through their L.A. Auto Show agents, would seek to suppress interest in a super-efficient vehicle technology developed by a small company truly challenges the imagination, particularly given the global energy security landscape through which America must navigate in the next several decades. Whether the behavior of the greater Los Angeles new car dealers, and by implication and association, the car makers that they serve, is based on non-invented here considerations, or something else, it raises questions about whether the current leadership of the American auto industry possesses the perspective, character, capability, and vision to escape the death march in which they currently appear to be locked. No matter how large a bailout the next Congress and President-elect Obama are willing to support. As dangerous as Detroit's problems may be, they also represent an enormous opportunity to reject antiquated attitudes and behaviors and create millions of new jobs and feed unprecedented economic growth, precisely because these problems are so large and so critical to address. Simply put, Furia concluded, a stimulus package that allows current auditing industry leadership to remain in control of the destiny of this critically important industry as it confronts this unprecedented crisis and opportunity is something that the new Congress and President-elect Obama should really think about. And then for more information, you can visit www.afstrinity.com or www.ricardo.com. Well, as I'll get to in my commentary, don't expect Obama or the new leadership, quote, new leadership, to do diddly. Okay, my commentary for today, November 12th. Rabble Rousing shows are now archived and can be heard at your convenience 24/7. Tell your friends to go to KVMR's homepage. Then in the right-hand column, click on Program Schedule, then click on Program Page for Rabble Rousing. Past shows will be listed there. Well, Barack Obama is president-elect. The opinions of what this really means vary greatly. Is he the political equivalent of the Messiah, who will return to us our stolen civil liberties and lead us away from the evil excesses of Bush, Cheney, and the neocons and back towards government of, by, and for the people? Or is he, as some listeners fear, the political equivalent of the Antichrist, a wolf in sheep's clothing, who will lead us further down the path of establishing a one-world government, governed of, by, and for the elites? Is this a true revolution, or simply the only game of good cop, or simply the old game of good cop, bad cop? I want to have hope. I really do. But then, I'm forced to look at Obama's voting record while senator. On every major issue, he sided with George Bush. Every time he could have taken a principled stand, as did his colleagues Dennis Kucinich, Ron Paul, Cynthia McKinney, and others, he chose the safe path. Don't make waves. Vote the non-controversial vote. The paramount and formidable question, who is Barack Obama? Put aside for a moment the marvelous rhetoric and photogenic stage presence. What does he truly believe in, and where will he lead us? Will he champion the repeal of the USA Patriot Act, the Military Commissions Act, and other assaults on our Constitution and civil liberties? Will he renounce the near-dictatorial powers George Bush fashioned for himself as president? Or will Obama keep those powers and, in effect, become a more benevolent dictator? Please understand me. I'm not opposed to a benevolent dictator. George Bush was absolutely correct when he blurted out that it's far easier to govern when one man or a small group makes all decisions. Democracy is very cumbersome. I'm also not opposed to the concept of a one-world government. If you viewed this planet from a spaceship, you would wonder in amazement why the world's people didn't all work together for the good of all. The only problems with rule by one man or a one-world government is who rules and for whose benefit they rule. Okay, enough of philosophy. Back to the present. I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but the party is over and reality rears its often ugly head. Many believe we dodged a bullet when Obama and Biden defeated McCain and Palin. But what have we won? Barack Obama's announced appointments indicate it will essentially be business as usual under his administration. Robert Abley and others have gone into the details of his appointments, so I won't go into the details here. But suffice it to say that so far, Obama has indicated he will do absolutely nothing to change the status quo. He's serving his corporate masters and Wall Street backers just as the other clowns would have done. Judging from his appointment so far, nothing will change in the financial sector, and the banksters will continue their plunder. The Federal Reserve will continue to print money to bail out the big players, while the common folks will continue to lose purchasing power of their dollars. Never mind what the dollar looks like against other currencies. What can it buy at your grocery store? Under our, quote, new leadership, we will continue to let Israel dictate our foreign policy in the Middle East. As window dressing, we may shift some combat troops from Iraq into neighboring Afghanistan, but rest assured, we'll keep enough troops in Iraq to ensure we still control their oil. There will be no genuine health care reform, and certainly no government-supported health care for all Americans. That would be socialism, and we only have socialism for Wall Street, large banks, and soon our absurd excuse for an auto industry. 1 week after the election, and it's already looking like it'll be business as usual in the nation's capital, featuring an attractive black family in the White House and all the usual very white suspects pulling the strings behind the curtains. The media is making a big issue over his plans to shut down our torture gulag at Guantanamo. It is a great step and long overdue, but there's no mention of any plans to dismantle the spying on Americans, the sending of folks off to be tortured in foreign countries, which is called, rendition, extraordinary rendition. Yes, it is extraordinary. Obama hasn't mentioned that. There's no mention of reining in the absurd excesses of the Homeland Security goons and the other unconstitutional features of the Bush-Cheney reign. Barack Obama is no liberal, and he's certainly no progressive. He's a very intelligent and well-spoken lackey of the elite. Why else would they have allowed him to attain the office? He's definitely not a reformer. He's window dressing. I'm sorry to rain on your parade, but that's how I see it. Believe me, I'm as disappointed saying this as you might be hearing this. Okay, and I'll give you a chance to comment on that later in the show when we open the phone lines. Next item. Politics does have its humorous side. Witness this gem from the recent election. Out of nearly 3 million votes cast for the Senate in Minnesota, Republican incumbent Norm Coleman has a 438-vote lead over Democrat Al Franken. Franken was a former writer for Saturday Night Live. Coleman declared victory when his lead was 725 votes, but it's since been dropping. At that time, he urged Franken to forego a recount, automatically triggered when the margin is so slim. Coleman was quoted as saying, "I just think the need for a healing process is so important." That's nice, Norm. Would you have declared yourself the loser and given up your right for a recount if you had been behind by those 725 votes? Because you're such a great believer in the political healing process? Sure you would have, Norm. Next item. For those of you who thought Sarah Palin would fade into the tundra and never be heard from again, guess again. It seems she might be the next Republican intellectual giant in the mold of Dan Quayle and King George W. Witness this exchange reported by Dan Joling, Associated Press. Asked if she felt muzzled by her limited time with reporters during the campaign, Palin said the media is a cornerstone of democracy and an important part of the checks and balances on government. At least that's what that is the interpretation presented by the wire service. Here's what she actually said. Quote, "Heaven forbid that a candidate or an elected official shy away from speaking to the media. So it was a little bit of a frustration that I didn't get to call more of those shots, and I guess that was sort of the rube criticism was, she wants to talk to more of the media than perhaps some in the campaign wanted me to." Close quote. That was a direct quote. If any listener understands that, please call in and explain it to the rest of us. Next item. A tidbit from my favorite astrology site. A caller to a talk radio show identified himself as an elderly black man. He said his grandson was planning on voting to deny gays the right to marry. He sat the kid down and pointed out that when he and the kid's grandmother married, their union was illegal in 23 states. Intermarriage between races was called miscegenation and was against the law for many years. He talked his grandson into voting to allow civil rights. My comment. The media is reporting that from the voting demographics, many blacks voted for Proposition 8. Isn't it interesting how a discriminated against minority can so easily support discrimination against other minorities? Perhaps their grandparents should have spoken up. While I'm on my soapbox, I have an opinion on Proposition 8. The people have spoken, and Proposition 8 won, fair and square. I received an email informing me that there's a movement to repeal it. If you want to sign their petition, the site is www.couragecampaign.org/repealprop8. My question is that the wisest tack to take? This could go on forever. The other side will not give up, and they have lots of money behind them, and they're delighted to spend it. You could repeal the proposition, they could bring it up again, you could repeal it again, they could bring it up again, it could go on forever. My suggestion to gay rights activists, if the issue really is about the rights that you would have under being legally married, why not just have a proposition asking for those rights? Have a proposition that gives you all of the rights of a marriage without having to call it this one word that so offends the other side. It seems to me that that might be a solution to the problem. Okay, that's my take on the supposed new direction Barack Obama will take us. I now invite listeners to call in with your opinions. Please keep in mind that all opinions voiced on KVRMAR represent the speakers only and do not necessarily represent those of management, staff, or contributors. And this is very important. Unlike corporate media talk shows, KVMR has no call screening. Are you aware that corporate media talk shows, even NPR, selects which calls they will allow on the air? That's censorship, folks. Here at KVMR, no one decides if we'll take your call or not. In fact, there's no we. I'm alone in the booth doing my gig. No censorship or selecting middlemen. You call, I answer, we talk. Listener-sponsored community radio. What a concept. All right, I'm going to begin with a comment that was sent in by a listener. Life isn't about how to survive the storm, but how we dance in the rain. Okay, that's her take. Now for yours. You can call in the studio now, 265-9555 or 1-800-355-5867. So if you have any comments about the recent election, about Obama as our new president-elect, comments about my commentary, you're welcome to call in. And if not, I will continue reading at you. The time is 12:29. The station is KVMR, broadcasting out of Nevada City, California. Your host is Chamba Lane, and the name of the show is Rabble Rousing. And I'm surprised that nobody's calling in. Okay. We had a lot of call-ins last week, none this week. You're welcome to call in. Here we go. Caller, you're live on KVMR.
Hey, Chamba, how you doing today? Who was that writer who wrote the article there, Raining on the Parade?
That's me.
Oh, that was you?
That's
okay.
Me.
All right, now, I don't know. You know, he had to run in the center, you know that, to not piss off too many people.
Absolutely.
Okay, so it could be that he may be more progressive than we think, because, and now that he's going to be in there, I mean, yeah, he's got, you know, Rahm Emanuel in there, who's kind of a good old boy, but, you know, he makes things happen, and don't you think that he will, in fact, I've heard them say that he will carry out Obama's policies, because that's his job, that's why he was picked for the job. And in today's B, there's a big article in there about their focus on ethics and trying to restrict the lobbyists. So that's just the beginning. And they're also talking about revisiting this $850. I don't know why everybody keeps saying $700 billion bailout. It's $850. They tagged on all the ornaments there on the fat, pork fat onto that.
Oh, yeah.
So they're talking about revisiting that, and instead of sending that money off to the big bankers and all the fat cats who made all the money already illegally, maybe sending some of that to the auto industry. And I know some people are saying, well, maybe we shouldn't be bailing out them, but, you know, that's 10% of our workforce. And
Wait a minute. 10% of our the nation's workforce?
Of the nation's workforce is what I'm hearing is auto industry related. You
okay.
All the people that sell parts and repair cars and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
It's a big chunk. So we could put, I don't know, I haven't heard this, but why don't we put the auto industry on, and let's say, a World War II type wartime footing and say, listen, you need to retool. You need to retool right now. You need to start pumping out hybrids and electric cars and smaller fuel-efficient cars, and let's start giving the Asian car market a real run for its money. We can, with that can-do American attitude that we've got. So, you know, I think they're looking at things, and it's still very early. I mean, it's what, 2 months until he's even inaugurated. So some of the things that they're doing are not looking too bad. Yeah, they've got some of the old people, but wouldn't you want some experienced people in there? To make up for the experience that he personally doesn't have. But it seems to me that he's,
okay,
you know, he's talking change, and I think that there may be more change down the road. Let's give him a little chance to run with it.
Okay, thank you for your opinion. I certainly hope you're right, and I wish I wish we could have a dialogue and I could pick things apart or comment on them as you said them. As far as having experienced people, yes. My fear is that the people he's choosing and where their experience is coming from.
Well, he did take campaign money from the financial industry. There's no doubt about it.
I don't care who he took money from. The question is who he's appointing now, and he's appointing the good old boys.
Yeah.
That's what disturbs me.
Yeah.
It's not just Rahm Emanuel.
Right.
When he goes back to the Wall Street boys and he appoints a Wall Street guy, one of the things Kennedy did is he brought in brain trust from the universities. He didn't go to the good old boys network.
Yeah.
Obama is not taking that path.
I think he is, though. I'm sure he's bringing in some of the naysayers, too. He's read about everything written about Lincoln. And Lincoln, as you know, was famous for bringing in, you know, enemies, political enemies.
It ain't what they say, it's what they do.
Right.
I'm looking at his appointees. I certainly hope you're right. I would love to be wrong on this one.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I'd like to be right on this one. Good luck to all of us.
All right. Thanks very much for your call.
Thanks, Jamba.
Okay. Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Yeah, Jamba?
Yeah, you're live.
In relation to that last caller
who
was talking about bailing out the auto?
Yep.
Yeah. Why don't we make it a provision of that bailout that 50% of the automotive business goes to the workers?
Wonderful idea, and here's my bottom line is everybody can phone in with wonderful ideas. They can write them in editorials. And I'm not seeing that Obama's following them. That's my fear.
Yeah.
That's you come up with a terrific idea. There's many terrific ideas, but I'm not seeing the rubber hitting the road. I'm not seeing them putting any stipulations on any of these bailouts. They're just tossing money away.
Yeah, that's true, and it's our money.
It's our money, and Obama, by his appointees, seems to be allowing this to continue. That's my concern.
Well, maybe the American public should stop paying their taxes until they get what they want.
That's certainly an interesting idea.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Yeah.
Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Hi.
You're live.
Yeah, I'm calling to announce the start of Obama Watch. Citizens keeping an eye on Obama. Our purpose is to develop a weekly internet newsletter commenting on our 44th president's actions.
Okay.
And providing a scorecard on promises made and kept, promises undone, and compromises made. Anyone interested can contact Jim Houle. My email address, jfh@rwwifi.net.
Give us that again.
JFH, F as in Frank, jfh@rwwifi.net.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
All right, have a great day. Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Hi, Jamba. I've been enjoying your show, but I've been kind of astounded by I just turned off NPR, which is Talk of the Nation, and of course the topic is great concession speeches of presidential elections, and they're talking about Kerry's concession speech, which basically was throwing in the towel when the second election was stolen. And my issue right now is there going to be any accountability of any kind for Bush and Cheney? I mean, are these guys just going to walk away from this? And it's like somebody comes into your house and trashes your house, and you come in afterwards, and it's kind of a mess, and you hire someone to clean up the house. And so I'm kind of using you as a chance to vent that, hey, we've had the most corrupt presidency in the history of this country. They've trashed everything. We've tortured people. We've lost habeas corpus. You know,
yep.
So my comment to you is there going to be any accountability at all for Bush and Cheney?
And my reply to you is don't ask me, ask Obama. That's a wonderful question.
Now, why would you dump this on Obama? Wouldn't you dump this on the Democrats like Nancy Pelosi?
Oh, fine. Sure. Sure. Absolutely. Dump it on all of the people in power.
Okay.
That these guys absolutely, in my opinion, they should be hung from lampposts.
Yeah, I know. And another thing I have to say is Obama is not Jesus. I mean, I was listening to NPR a week ago, and these people called in from Nigeria and were demanding that Obama deal with, you know, Shell Petroleum. We need to, Obama is not Jesus, and this poor man is inheriting this mess, and the people that created this mess are going to go to their ranches in Paraguay and
well,
be fine.
And yet he is in the best position of all to do something about it. No, he's not Jesus. No, he's not the Messiah. But he is in the best position to do something about it.
Well, I would disagree. I would say our Congress has been in the best position to do something about it for the last 8 years.
You've just answered your own question.
Okay. Well, thanks very much.
They ain't
going to
do nothing.
Yeah.
All right. And
that's
thank,
super. Thanks yep. for cheering me up. Okay.
Thank you for your concern.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I wish I could cheer you up more. Caller, you're live on KVMR. Caller, you're live.
Yes, Jamba.
Yes.
About 6 months ago, I saw some sort of an interview, I believe on TV, with a commentator, and I believe it was a GM CEO.
Okay.
And the thing that they didn't intend to get to and somehow danced around that I picked up a little innuendo on was that fuel mileage here in the U.S. expectations seem to be different than the fuel mileage that in other markets, I'm not sure, Europe, South America.
Okay.
But the GM was producing in these other markets.
Yeah.
And having to compete in the other markets.
Yeah.
And I realized, gee, they already have ability, but they choose not to do it here.
Okay, so I'm gonna take a radical position and maybe defend the automakers. We don't know what standards that they have to adhere to here that they don't have to adhere to in their markets.
Oh, that's a good point.
And it may be a more rigorous standard. Your point may be even stronger once we look at that, but I don't know.
What do other callers, what can they input from other countries they've been in for fuel mileage standards and or crash or strength standards?
Well, it also depends what fuel they're allowed to use. For instance, California has great restrictions on the fuel we can use. So there's a lot of factors that play into it. But your underlying point is that the American auto industry may have a lot of technology that they're forced to use in other countries to improve gas mileage. And if they're not forced to do it here, they don't bother.
Right.
And that's a very good point.
What can other people input? I'd like to hear.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for raising the issue.
Uh-huh.
Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Hey, Sean. I just want to say I agree with you on your views with Obama, but one of your previous callers stated something about, you know, maybe if people decide to stop paying their taxes,
right,
that might make a change. I would just like to say that that's the only way anything's ever going to change.
Okay.
If everybody pays their taxes, I mean,
yep,
what power do you really have? I mean, you know, you have none. I mean, you have to get them with their purse string. And I wish people would wake up to that, do a little bit of research, and if they really cared about this country, you know, they'd look into that.
Okay.
Thank you
for your comment. Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Good morning, Sean. I'd just like to throw something in there into the whole fray of things there and let you know that the only way I see this country getting back on its feet is if we get jobs back out here, you know. All these previous little mini recessions in the early 90s, early 80s, late 70s, when all the gas crunching started, we had jobs then, Sean, but we had good jobs. That was pre-NAFTA, pre-China and all that stuff. And the only way for this to come full circle and come back to America, including these multi-trillion-dollar bailouts, is if they put restrictions on these organizations they're giving this free taxpayer money to, and they've got to require them to bring jobs back here in order to get this money. It's the only way that this is going to be a sustainable effort on their part, meaning on our part, because this is our tax dollars.
All right, let me offer a radical counter to that. What if you and I were the fat cats, and we wanted to control the people? We wanted to run the country our way, and we basically wanted to grab everybody's money and power. Wouldn't the best thing we could do be to limit jobs, to keep families that both members of the family had to work, and sometimes two and three jobs? In other words, they wouldn't have the luxury of thinking about these things. They'd be busy trying to pay the rent and feed their kids.
Too tired to stay awake and
you
think
got it
about it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, that seems to me to be the way the game's played. So,
it is, but now that we've got all these big outfits that are crying for free money after they've blown all theirs,
there
has to be some consequence here. They have to be required to provide or bring jobs back to the United States.
Well, as a previous caller alluded to, don't tell me, tell Nancy Pelosi. Because
you're absolutely right,
and you'll notice that the people that are supposedly representing us are putting no obstacles to these bailouts and giveaways. They're putting no conditions. It's outrageous.
We got a great big story when this whole $700 billion baloney started.
Yeah.
And now the money's getting doled out. We're doing something completely other than what we were told was going to be done with this chunk of money.
Sure. Yep.
Well, thanks for the program.
Okay.
Keep it up.
Yeah, thank you. And before I take the next caller, I want to step back and look at, take a long view of the conversations we're having today. And this is starting to sound like right-wing talk radio. We're not that far apart from the real conservatives of this country that are just as outraged as we are. And KVMR is supposed to be a liberal radio station, if you want to use labels. My listeners are supposed to be, quote, liberals. Again, if you want to use labels. This transcends liberal, conservative, red, blue, all of that stuff. This is the people getting outraged. And I find it fascinating that you could tune into a Rush Limbaugh show and you could hear people making the same commentaries that people are making on this show. Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Yeah, I have a comment about the not paying taxes. I don't know how many of these people that have talked about that have actually tried that.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing that happens is the IRS comes in and they freeze your bank accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, without money in this country, you now really can't do much. So, I mean, I applaud people's thoughts on that. But the reality is it's very difficult to do without ruining your own life. I've tried to do it myself. And had to spend multiple thousands of dollars to get myself kind of back and getting those people off my back.
Yeah, if you have to do that, you have to be very careful in the way you disengage from the system.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have any properties or anything at all, you're pretty much stuck. I'm thinking a better approach I'd like to see is get rid of this two-party system. Already in this election, there was multiple third-party candidates, none of which got much traction, none of which got very many votes. I'm thinking that's maybe one of the best ways that we can do it. It's going to be hard, but right now a legal avenue exists that we can vote in people that might actually represent the interests of the common person. And until people quit watching, national TV and, even some of the shows that even surprises me, like listening to Amy Goodman, she only talks about the two main candidates for the most part. She's better than others on giving some airtime to the third-party candidates, but I'd like to see much, much more time giving to the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I would see that realistic chance to make some change.
Yeah, and the system is set up so it doesn't have a chance.
Oh, definitely, but people have to make that decision themselves and get out and convince others that a third party third party is a legal avenue of doing it without ruining your own life.
My own personal opinion is the only way to do that is to take over one of the, quote, political parties from the inside.
Yeah.
Doing it from the outside, in my opinion, doing it from the outside is impossible because it's a stacked game.
I agree with that. The only thing about taking over a party internally is the big money controls those two parties. And to fight against the big money,
you're going to fight no matter what. Yeah, you're going to fight against them either way.
But I really wish people would at least give some time to investigating third parties. Seeing somebody like Bob Barr get 500,000 votes in the whole country, nobody even saw the guy.
Well, how many did Ron Paul get? We don't know.
I think a few less than that, maybe 400,000. Yeah. He was a write-in, though.
Yeah.
So that's pretty dang good for a write-in.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that was my favorite choice, absolutely.
Yeah. So. All right, thanks for your call.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Hello.
You're live on KVMR.
All right. I'm actually right behind the guy who is talking about the third party because I agree with him 100%. It seems like trying to do the tax thing is just so risky.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But, the strategy I've been holding is that everyone who has voted for Obama needs to, at least in California, be green. I can't say for the other states because there's other alternatives that other states think about. But if we did all go green, the strategy would be, yes, we want progression. I mean, what I've been hearing a lot of the great thinkers talking about is that we have to start directing Obama, not allowing the big money to direct them, but the people.
I think that's a very important point.
And so if we did massively start thinking and telling everyone we can change right to green immediately,
well, okay,
this would be a phenomenal way of showing that this is what we want for our country.
All right, let's step back a bit.
All right.
Your point is that one of your major issues is green. That's important to you.
Yes, but I would like to say something else about the green.
Well, rather than getting on a soapbox and talking about green, how about if we step back a pace and just keep with your idea that it's important to communicate with Barack Obama and his people and tell them what we want?
Correct. But to do that, we would all have to, as a grassroots, show that what we're changing into. That's what I'm saying. It's not just what I say. It's not one person. It would have to be a mass group of us that does it. But again, what I would like to say about the Green, my complaints with the Green is that they waste their money on presidential elections instead of working on ground level.
Very good point.
Which would be the mayors, the...
Where we live.
Yeah, where we live. And that is the part that, for the Greens, they need to stress on.
Okay. Thanks very much for your point of view.
All right. And so maybe, just before I hang up, maybe I have sparked people to think about this. All right. Goodbye.
All right. You have a good day. Okay. The phones are silent, so if anybody else wants to call in, we've got 10 minutes left. Don't wait until the last minute, so I have to go through the litany of saying, I'm sorry, it's too late. So if you want to call in, now's the time. 265-9555, 1-800-355-5867. Okay, somebody has saved the listeners from listening to me to read more articles. Caller, you're live on KVMR.
Hey, Chamba. I'm not so sure if I buy that we don't have government buy-in for the people. Because, quite frankly, I think the level of quality that we have in our government reflects the level of quality of citizenship that I see across the country.
Okay.
The fact that we weren't able to advance impeachment of Bush at all, the fact that the people never seem to actually stand up for what they presumably and, what they prostate they want, that they stand up for and go to Washington and demand it. Everybody's too busy with their own lives and watching TV or something or other. And I think that's what we see and reflected in the quality of government that we're enjoying.
Okay. Would you mind if I countered your argument?
Go ahead.
Okay. What is it that we're supposed to do? We the people, are in favor of impeachment. That's very clear. Our, quote, elected representatives refuse to act on our behalf. What are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to quit our jobs and actually take buses and planes to Washington, D.C.? There are laws now on the books against that sort of congregation. They would isolate us. They would put us off in pens and let us demonstrate for a while.
Yeah,
what is the mechanism for us demanding what we want? I don't see it.
Well, when you look at the small spread between Obama in terms of the popular vote, I think it's. I was looking for a landslide in the popular vote. Obviously, that didn't happen. I think that speaks volumes right there. You and I may be in favor of impeachment because you and I are ashamed of what has been done in our names. But obviously, the preponderance of the nation is not.
Well, the election was not on impeachment. The election was mainly on economic grounds, and I can understand why some Republicans would continue to vote Republican just based on economic grounds, and they might in fact be in favor of impeachment. I think the polls, and we have to suspect polls, there was something like 70% of the American people were in favor of impeachment. So what? What can we do about it? What's the mechanism?
Well, for one, I believe that the country is really, and I'm talking about the people,
right,
are really focused in the wrong direction.
Well,
and that is this economic fiasco that we are presented with right now.
Okay.
It's not as though we didn't see that coming. That writing's been on the wall in capital letters for a very long time.
That's true for those that are clever enough to see it, but for the average person, I don't think so.
Well, perhaps, but, you know, that might be another conversation.
Okay, fair enough.
But what I'm getting at is that, in terms of taking responsibility, some of you callers were headed in that direction earlier. Why aren't we taking responsibility for what we have done to the world under this administration? I tell you what, the United States is responsible for the Nuremberg Accord under which the Nazis were hanged after it was all over.
Yeah.
That were applied to Bush right now, he'd be hanging.
Oh, certainly.
So what I'm asking you is, why doesn't this country, and I'm talking about its people, understand what has been done in our name and take responsibility for it. That would be the first step. And the mechanisms would present themselves.
I don't see that. I don't see the mechanisms presenting themselves.
Well,
I hope you're right.
I don't think it makes a difference whether I'm right or wrong, because that's water under the bridge, unfortunately. But what I'm saying is that the election took place on the wrong issues entirely.
Oh, absolutely. What I would like to see in an election is I would like to see the American people have an initiative. Do you want to impeach the president and vice president?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to take torturing off the table? Do you want to close Guantanamo? Do you want to end extraordinary rendition? Do you want to end the Electoral College?
Right.
The American people should be allowed to vote on all of these major issues, and instead we're given BS issues. Do you want to have the firemen and the policemen get more or less money? Do you want to build more or less prisons? It's all nonsense.
Well, so in your estimation, why is it that people that talk sense in many of these areas, like Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich, how come they can't get any traction with the American people then?
They have, because of the media. It's a totally controlled media. Do any of these people, I mean, a caller even alluded to the fact that the supposed champion of our feelings, Amy Goodman, she doesn't talk about the third party candidates. She doesn't give them equal time. The rest of the medium gives them even less.
Yeah, I do understand that. And I believe
it's a stack
you're right.
Deck.
You know, I think that too can be brought back to an issue in terms of personal responsibility. I, for one, do not have TV. For any number of reasons, most of which you have just mentioned.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think, you know, if the country at large said, listen, primetime TV, we're just not interested in A, buying the junk that you're advertising more than you have any content.
Oh, boy.
Nor the brainwashing that you're delivering here.
Yeah.
We're going to turn this shit off.
Yeah. Okay.
Then we'd start seeing some change.
You're asking for a level of political sophistication that this country just doesn't have. I suggest that we might start in our schools.
Now you're making my point for me.
Okay.
I believe that we have the government we deserve based on the level of citizenship that I see across the country.
Well, okay. All right, I get your point. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We've got more callers. Thanks for the call.
Yeah.
Okay, we're running low on time, so I'm going to ask the callers to be brief. Caller, you're live on the air. Please be brief.
Okay.
You got to turn your radio down.
Okay, I'm here.
All right, you're live on the air. Please be brief.
I will. Did you say turn? Oh, okay, that's the time delay.
Okay.
I'm ready. You said just commenting on what you said in the media being responsible for the issues not being thoroughly discussed.
Right.
It was Allen Ginsberg who said the failures in America were the failures of the artists and not the politicians, and I think there's a lot to be said for that, because we don't have a vision right now of any alternative. And sort of relevant to that is, who was it? Well, somebody who was testifying before the...
Okay, we're almost out of time.
Okay. Well, there's a systemic problem in our country and in our financial system that we believe that greed will be able to take care of our problems, that, you know, people will look out for themselves, the businesses and the financial corp and everything else like that will, you know, look out for their own interests, which will eventually look out for the consumer, which, you know, greed will eventually...
I've got a whole host of callers. I'm going to ask you to collect your thoughts and then call again. Caller, you're live on the air. We're almost out of time.
Yeah, I just had a quick comment.
Go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to say that people... Am I live? Oh, I'm sorry.
Caller, we're almost out of time. You're the last call. Caller, you're live on the air.
Hello, Chamba. You know, a lot of what I hear going on here is the reason we can't deal with this is we're a republic. You know, we're not a democracy. You hear Bush go off about democracy around the world, and we don't have a democracy here. The reason you and I and all the people who spoke today can't do anything is because we're a republic. We were a democracy. We could do something. One vote, one person. Bye.
Thank you for your call. Okay, we're out of time.